south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Just a quick message about the upcoming seminar in March 2023. As this show goes out on Sunday, January 22nd, 2023, that gives you a little over a week to get in on those early bird discounts, because on February 1st, we're back to the regular price. So if you sign up by February 1st, you get a $500 discount off the normal price. Remember, my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar will take place in both Guatemala and El Salvador from March 17th through 24th. For all the info and sign-up details, go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link. That's expatplanb.com. All right, back to business. You know, just the other day, I was at one of my Latin American buddies' houses. If he were in the U.S., you'd call him middle class, but down here in Latin America, he's upper middle class. He lives in a modern, gated, guarded community in a house that's down here worth maybe $150,000 to $200,000. In the States, it'd be worth $600,000 or $800,000, depending on where you live. Anyway, I was in the living room, sitting on the couch next to the dog, because, you know, Latin Americans don't know how to handle dogs, and the dog jumped up and sat right next to me. Par for the course. Get ready for that yourself. If you happen to visit a Latin American household, most of them have pets, and they'll jump right up on you. Man, I f***ing hate that. Not because I don't like dogs. I've always had them. But you see, in Latin America, even with the very wealthy folks, dogs are completely untrained. They're often just scruffy little dirt balls that get a bath every blue moon. And the thing is, it seems Latin Americans like long-haired dogs. They think they're cute. And when it comes to hygiene and cleanliness, long-haired dogs are the worst kind of animal or pet to have in the tropics. Worst of all, during the rainy season. So anyway, I'm sitting on the couch with this dirty, smelly dog. And I noticed a couple of extension cords coming out from behind the couch. So I took a peek over the backside of the couch, and I saw something that would be completely out of the ordinary in the States, but down here it's... business as usual. I saw a rat's nest of extension cords and plugs all jammed into a single electric outlet. Worse yet, the outlet and the switch plate were hanging out of the wall. They weren't even attached properly to the junction box. I saw, get this, a three-way plug. You know what those are, right? Up in the States, they're sometimes known as cheater plugs. So there was one three-way plug plugged into another three-way plug plugged into another three-way plug. So, in effect, the guy created himself a nine-way plug. And what a rat's nest of wires. I mean, look, the guy didn't even spend $5 to get one of those outlet strips. At least those things have sockets and plug-ins that are lined up in a row. Kind of an organized rat's nest. And they've got a breaker or a fuse in them, too. Now, I'm telling you this because the guy's house is only about 3 or 4 years old. Yet they got about the same number of electrical outlets required by code back in the 1940s. And that's one of the things that really drives a lot of us gringos and expats nuts when we rent a place. Before we even get fully moved in, we've loaded up all the sockets and are looking to buy extra electrical outlet strips and cheater plugs ourselves. And by the way, even in some of the most upscale houses, you can have a giant walk-in closet or a garage without a single electrical outlet in it at all. That's totally against any kind of electrical code, whether in the States or down here in Latin America, but who gives a shit about electrical codes down here when the contractors are on the honor system? And worse yet, the place you really need a bunch of electrical outlets is in the kitchen. There should be an outlet every 3 or 4 feet at least above the countertop, and they all should be GFI switches. You've seen them. Ground fault interrupt switches. The kind with a little red and black push-button breaker switch in the center. It's an outlet with its own internal circuit breaker, designed so you don't fry or get shocked if there's a grounding problem in your circuit. Funny thing, though, I've never, ever been in a kitchen here in Latin America. I don't care how new the building is, even if it's a brand new high-rise tower with two beautiful elevators. Still, no GFIs in the bathrooms or kitchens or anywhere. Yet every house and building in Canada and the U.S. has to have them in the kitchens, bathrooms, and utility rooms. But here in Latin America, I've never seen one of those GFI outlets in places where they really belong. garages, utility rooms, kitchens, and bathrooms. Except in first world developments and hotels like Clarion Suites, Hiltons, Marriott's, etc. Oh, but they're available at hardware stores and such, but no one buys them because they're something like $15 a piece, whereas a regular electrical outlet's like $2 or $3 at most. So then you might ask, if you buy or rent a place, should you go out to the hardware store and buy a few? Sure, they're a little bit bulky, but they do fit into the standard electrical outlet cutout. So you can remove a standard outlet and put a GFI in its place. And after that, won't you feel good? You just saved someone, maybe yourself, from an electrical catastrophe. That's what you're thinking anyway, but is that really true? Well, just a few comments here. Being that in a past life I was an actual electrical engineer, I should know just a little bit more than the average guy about this kind of stuff. The question is, just because they're standard up in Milwaukee and Cleveland, do you really need to put them in? Are you really in danger of getting electrocuted if you don't? Well, the thing is, I've been down here over 30 years. I get around and I don't see those things anywhere, except in first world hotels and such. Yet I've never heard of anyone getting killed or even seriously injured by not having them in the house, which is what those GFI interrupters are supposed to prevent. I've never seen an article in the news or on the internet where someone's been killed or seriously injured in their bathroom or kitchen, whatever, due to the fact those things should have been installed but weren't. Now, that's not to say you don't get shocked. Every once in a while, walking around your house, touching things with wet hands, etc., especially if you're barefoot, whether you have those GFIs installed or not. In fact, I remember just about a week and a half ago, I was at a mom-and-pop hotel, and I got a nice little buzz walking around barefoot. So did I panic, run down to the front desk, and threaten to sue like any red-blooded litigious American? Nope, I just donned a pair of flip-flops and went on my merry way. So then you might ask, why do we get these occasional little shocks? That's because so many houses and apartments, especially if they'd been constructed more than 10 years ago, don't have an earth ground installed. You know, when you open up an outlet and look at the wiring, there's supposed to be a green wire in there. That's the international color code for the earth ground. So no green wire, no earth ground. Though sometimes, but not often, there'll be a bare copper wire in the box, and that'll be your earth ground. I know it looks dangerous and everything because there's no plastic sheath around it. It's a bare wire. But believe me, it's earth ground. That means under normal circumstances, you could never get a shock by touching it. Well, you know, over the years, I've lived in dozens of houses and apartments. And only the ones built within the last 10 years or so have a green ground wire, earth ground. And even then, you can't be sure unless you pull off a switch plate and check the colors yourself. Which brings us to another dilemma. Suppose you're so gringoized that you absolutely have to have GFI interrupters in your bathroom and your kitchen. Some gringos and expats are worriers. They just have to have everything up to first world code. Nothing wrong with that. But as mentioned, could be we've all been scammed with these GFI interrupters because statistically they rarely save anyone. And let's say you buy a house or apartment that's 10 or 15 years old and you want to install GFIs in your bathroom and kitchens. Well, the thing is, the place probably won't have a green ground wire if it's that old, 10 or 15 years or more. So if you buy a few GFIs and try to wire them in, there's a good chance they won't operate properly anyway because they need that green wire. Though I've noticed myself, because I've installed more than a few of those things, that sometimes the metal outlet box is earth ground. A lot of older systems were set up that way, but it's not code anymore. You can check it out with a meter to make sure. Maybe the metal box is ground, maybe it's not. Because sometimes what you think is ground is slightly different from ground, because of the rust and corrosion that happens within the walls of the concrete and cement at the junction where it touches the metal box. You'll certainly notice in a house that's 10 years old or more, you'll see if you take off the plastic outlet plate, it's enclosed in a metal box, not plastic. There'll certainly be some rust and corrosion around it. By the way, speaking of metal and plastic boxes, you'll find that if you pull off a switch plate and there's a plastic box there, that's a sign it's a newer house built in the last 10 years. Then there's a good chance the electrician will have installed a green ground wire because more of the modern electricians will try to stick to that minimal code at least. Oh, and one last thing about those GFI receptacles. If, for example, your kitchen has, let's say, 4 electrical outlets, and down here, believe me, unless you built the house yourself, that's beyond optimistic. That'd be like winning the outlet lottery. Anyway, suppose you want to switch over to GFIs because, well, you feel just a little bit nervous without them. Guess what? You normally only have to install 1, not 4. You just have to play around a bit and find out where the first electrical outlet feed is. Because you see, they'll all be on the same parallel circuit. You'll just have to find out where the first one is in the parallel line. That is, the one that's closest to the breaker box. So you see, if you just put a GFI in that one outlet box, you're covered. Every electrical outlet down the line will be protected. You get it? Good. You're ready to wire a house. So then, as far as installing those GFIs, what do I recommend? If I rent a place, even if it's a long-term rental, let's say for 6 months or a year, unless you're the first one in, it's a brand new house, you got about a 98% chance there will be no GFIs in that place. And it would be an easy thing for me to spend $15 and put one in the kitchen or in the main bathroom. By the way, lots and lots of Latin American bathrooms, especially in rentals, do not have an outlet at all. So ladies, good luck with those hair dryers. Anyway, if I'm renting a place, even a long-term rental, I won't bother putting in a GFI. However, I've built a few houses and I always put GFIs in the kitchen and bathrooms. It's just an old lingering habit I have from my past life as an electrical engineer. So what I'm saying is GFIs installed in your house are really not necessary. Though at $15, they're kind of a cheap insurance policy, though somewhat like buying insurance against a lightning or meteor strike. Then there's old school people like my mother who always have some kind of image in their head about someone sitting in a bathtub listening to a radio, the dog or a kid runs in, knocks it over, and it's curtains. Has your mom or grandma ever told you that one? Well, I hate to break it to the moms and grandmas out there, but I don't think anyone sits in the tub and listens to the radio anymore, and if they do, it's coming from the smartphone or battery-powered boombox. And believe me, there's zero risk of electrocution or even any kind of shock at all if that boombox or smartphone drops in the water. Wait a minute. I take that back. You will have the shock of dropping a grand or so for another smartphone. Pain in the pocketbook. All right, now an email from Cal, also living in Toronto. He says, Johnny, I'm in the service industry and us people who rely on tips have a hard time saving money. Unless, of course, you're a hooker or in the escort service. I know a few ladies like that. They can make huge tips, but still, they don't save. Most people I know just aren't good at it. I once heard someone say, poor and middle-class people never get rich because they have habits of poor and middle-class people. As for me, I'm dead set on having a plan B. Things are getting worse and worse by the day, but here in Canada, I live in a constant state of stress, even panic. I can't afford to come to your seminar, but I'd sure like to come down and check it out. The only way I can do it is backpacker style. I know you make fun of backpackers, Johnny, but for some of us, that's the only way we can do it. Anyway, in one of your recent previous shows, you were talking about tipping in Latin America. So being in the service industry myself, I'm sort of an expert on tipping. Your phrase, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, also pertains to tipping, you know. You see, Johnny, my dad, who was also in the service business as a young man in the 1950s, he was one of those bathroom service attendants. In some luxury hotels, they'd have a boy in the men's bathroom and a woman in the ladies giving out towels and polish and perfume for tips. Then he moved on up to maitre d' and wine server in a fine restaurant. He says, my dad, who was a very quiet guy, didn't say much, but I remember him saying this. He said, only rich people with generational wealth can afford to tip small. They're the only ones who can do so and live with themselves. They tip cheap and get right back into their limousines. However, rich people who once worked their way up from the service business tip big. He said the former, those kind of people go around thinking they're special people, smarter and more accomplished than you and me. He said, therefore, you should never think of yourself as a special person or you will become like them, an a-hole. And my dad never swore, not in front of the kids anyway. Then he says, Johnny, just a little inside tip on valet parking. He says, I assume all the big hotels and resorts in Latin America have valet parking. Well, here's my tip. If I had a nice car, I'd never let anyone park it. And not for the reasons you're probably thinking. He says, I found out through a friend who is a valet parking attendant that you can download an app on the dark web and clone the keyless key fob on any car, as long as you've got the fob in your hand and the motor's running, which is exactly what happens in valet parking. In other words, a select group of guys up in Toronto are cloning key fobs, and they don't steal the cars from the secure parking lot. They wait a day or two and track it. If the car is valuable enough, like a late model Mercedes SUV, they put a magnetic GPS tracker under the bumper, about as big as a pack of cigarettes, available on Amazon for under $100. And it can be constantly tracked in real time, and when it's parked anywhere on the street or in a Sam's Club or Costco or Walmart parking lot. Two guys on a motorcycle show up, one drops off with that cloned fob. That's how they do it. There are videos on YouTube how to do it. Just a tip, if you have a nice car and you use valet parking. Signed, Cal. All right, thanks for that, Cal. Now, as far as valet parking here in Latin America, you see it all over the place in the wealthier areas of town. Some big, well-known hotels and resorts and exclusive sort of VIP clubs and bars. I never use valet parking myself. Not because I'm worried about getting my car fob cloned. I just don't like anyone I don't know driving my car. How about you? Now, as far as that method for stealing cars, you know, with such lag time down here in Latin America, I suppose that won't be coming here anytime soon. Though, maybe that'll be the next big thing for Mexican narcos to get into. By the way, anything labeled VIP here in Latin America is considered the ultimate in cool. It's another gringo wannabe thing. And even though I've yet to meet a Latin American who knew what the letters VIP stand for, to me it's comical or even a little sad. In fact, if they did know, it wouldn't be VIP, it would be PVI, because, you know, in the Spanish language, they flip the subject and the verb around. It would be persona muy importante, person very important, PVI, or more precisely, PMI, the M for muy, which means very. Even so, they continue using VIP. So it hasn't sunk in yet, they just don't get it. Even when you try to explain it, and I have, they actually think VIP is one word, VIP. The thing is, I've never met a Latin American knowledgeable enough about the phrase VIP to know that each letter stood for a word in English. In fact, right now, there's a hit reggaeton song where the singer, and I use that term very loosely, repeats VIP over and over again. It's a huge hit. People sing it on the streets. Down here, it's just a magical phrase. Every club has its VIP section. You name it. Car repair shops, hotels, casinos, even some big evangelical churches have VIP sections. I'm sure Jesus is happy about that. Yep, it's all about the show. Latinos, especially Latino men, love to put on the dog, trying to appear higher class and a cut above and more prosperous and upscale than the next guy. I'd have to say, unfortunately, about 90% of Latino men remain teenagers in their own minds forever. They never seem to grow up, to grow out of the need to put on the dog. There's certainly no shortage of incompletely educated morons. Then again, just look at the millions of undereducated morons addicted to dick cock up by you in the States. Then again, up in the States, the dick cock crowd are mostly teenagers and young adults. Am I being too optimistic in thinking they might grow out of it? Hey, as a teenager, I was an idiot too. How about you? And looking back and cringing a bit, I think I got past that. Though, it's debatable. I know, I'm starting to talk like every dad throughout history talking to his teenage kid. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking about all things Latin American. And now, an email from Mr. D. From, he says, the Socialist Republic of Montgomery County, Maryland. Yep, Maryland. Close to D.C., way too close for comfort. Right next to the viper's nest. Amongst other things, he says, I do have a question regarding 5 at 50. Now, you longtime listeners might remember what 5 at 50 means. That means by the time you're 50 years old, this is talking about the United States now, the average person's already on 5 prescription medicines. So how do you rate? Are you in that statistic? Anyway, Mr. D in his email says that statistic 5 at 50 just might connect to a way of keeping busy in my retirement. I plan to do that in Guatemala. He says, Johnny, if you recall in a previous email, I told you I had my thyroid removed and for the rest of my life, I'm on hormones. Despite my research, he says, I have not found any specific costs for the most common over-the-counter prescription drugs us older people are on or must take, such as in my situation. In particular, he says, if X drug happens to be available over-the-counter in Guatemala or any city in Guatemala like Antigua or Lake Atitlan. There's just no data or any spreadsheet you can look at to see what the costs actually are as compared to stateside prices and how they might vary from pharmacy to pharmacy. Then he says, I'm thinking of compiling such a list myself. Doing a project like that, he says, would at least keep me very busy and force the wife and I to travel to Guatemala, El Salvador, etc., to check on all the data and the price spreads. Then he says, I would welcome your thoughts on this. Now, I'm not looking for big money, as noted earlier, he says. I just want to remain busy once I move down. Then, in his email, he gives me a long list of reasons to get the hell out of Dodge, things that particularly bug him. Like the woke Hollywood mind virus that's been spreading, even to some favorite childhood icons like Scooby-Doo. He says just when you thought woke stupidity couldn't get any worse, Hollywoke has trashed our childhood icons. In the Scooby-Doo series now, he says they've got a guy named Fred. They've turned him into a mediocre white dude with teeny-weeny privates. And then there's Daphne, a popular mean girl orphan who deals drugs. Then there's Shaggy, who is a school nerd who worries that he's a beta male. And it only gets worse from there. Mr. D says, what the hell are they doing to our childhoods? The bastards, is nothing sacred anymore? Well, Mr. D, I sympathize with you, but we mustn't let these things get to us. Just vote with your feet as fast as you can, and all that woke stuff will be out of sight, out of mind. Though I have to say, I was never much into Scooby-Doo myself. In fact, you might think this strange, but I never was much into cartoons at all. I was more a sci-fi guy with dribs and drabs of the Three Stooges. Anyway, as for your idea of putting together a list of frequently used prescription drugs that can be found at Guatemalan drugstores and in other Latin American countries, that is a really good idea and it will keep you busy. Now, as to how you might monetize that, you could, I guess, charge, let's say, $20 for an updated list that comes out, let's say, every 6 months. Though, here's the thing, and maybe you haven't considered this. The cost of a particular drug can vary tremendously depending on the pharmacy you go to. For example, in Guatemala, I'd say there are about 10 chain drugstores. You know, they've got various locations around the city and the country. And probably 500 private mom-and-pop drugstores that aren't affiliated. And with some of those chain drugstores, even some of the private ones, if you pay cash instead of putting it on a credit card, you get 5, 10, even 20% off. Some pharmacies are advertised as discount pharmacies, and you get an automatic 20% off no matter what payment method you use. The other thing is you've got the proprietary drug and the generic. And believe me, no matter what you heard, the generic is the same as a proprietary. They have to be, and they're tested. But Big Pharma, you know how trustworthy Big Pharma is. They've had ongoing campaigns for years saying it's not true, always claiming that the proprietary drug is better, which can be 2, 3, 4, even 5 times as expensive as the generic. The odd thing is some very smart people I know have been caught in that trap, including my mother. She's one of those people who insists on the proprietary brand, but that's only because she's got good insurance, in fact, double insurance, so she gets it all paid for. The fact is, I know a lot of people like her. They're educated, but not scientists or scientific at all. They've bought into Big Pharma's marketing campaigns. Oddly enough, they're the ones that still believe in masks, hand goop, and lining up for continuous jabs and boosters. By the way, do you remember those days a couple of years ago when your friends and acquaintances would walk right up to you and brag, I just got the vax, as if they were first on the block to get the latest iPhone or something. They'd have that smug, shit-eating grin. They'd roll up a sleeve, show you the pinhole, and brag they got the Pfizer, not that second-rate Moderna shit. They're the same people that took 2 steps back when you walked by without a mask. Funny how now those same people, and I know quite a few of them, they don't want to be reminded of those early COVIDiot days a couple years back, when they were starstruck with Fauci and Big Pharma and hung on every word. But now, surprise, surprise, those same people who blindly sucked up to Fauci and Pharma are these days extremely leery about taking another jab. Funny too how everyone seems to know at least someone who's been royally with a bad reaction after getting the jab. But back to this idea of having a list of drugs in Latin America with names, prices, and availability at various pharmacies. Hey, sign me up. I want that list too. Oh, and one more thing. Some of the drugs, you know, have names that are slightly different here in Latin America. For example, ibuprofen. It's called ibuprofina. I know, it sounds quite the same, but there are drugs that don't sound the same as their U.S. counterparts at all. All that would have to be explained and sussed out in those reports, too. And even some generic names of some very common drugs, like, for example, a blood pressure drug, can have a completely different name than the one you're used to buying up in the States. Yet, it's exactly the same drug. It can be confusing. For example, there's a generic, inexpensive blood pressure medicine called Losarc. But the company that makes this generic has slapped their own name on it, called Blosar 50 or Blosar 50, which doesn't sound much like the generic at all. Why didn't they just call it Losar 50? At least it sounds like the real generic name, Losartan. But they didn't. Instead, they called it Blosar with a B, Blosar. See what I mean? It's going to take some work to put this list together. Could be worth it, though, if you could monetize it. It's something every gringo expat would definitely want. One good thing, though, if you go into a pharmacy, you can ask for a printout and price list, of all their commonly available medicines. I did just that a couple of years ago, and the printout had at least 200 medications on it. So getting individual price lists is the easy part. Transcribing all that into a document or list that gringos and expats can understand is another thing. And of course, that kind of data doesn't last forever, so it would have to be updated probably every 6 months or so. And now, an interesting email from longtime listener Bob, who lives in Oaxaca, Mexico. He said he's recently taken a drive south to Guatemala, and here's his report. He says, "Dear Johnny, I'm seeing a lot more USA-bound migrant hopefuls along the roads this trip. Many smaller groups of 3 to 8 people or so, all young guys. You can't blame them for buying the gringo dream and escaping the poverty of Central America. I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, God bless that old doddering fool Biden. Vamos, let's head north, amigos. By the way, many of these guys on the road were flagging me down for a ride on my way back. Not good passenger prospects, though. These are young, near-desperate adventurers. Not your casual 60s hippie backpacker. Thumbing a ride, that's for sure." He says, "It's at these times when I'm filled simultaneously with pity and fear. Though I did buy a father-son soon-to-be illegal duo a coffee one morning, though, as I was getting back on the road at first light. They were sleeping on bare concrete in an alcove. The father was dazed, and the son was grinning ear to ear as they were folding up their threadbare blankets. I regret not buying him a sandwich. It was my rich northern guilt, I guess, displaying itself in all its glory. Oh well, you can't save everyone. Nevertheless," he says, "it was a fine trip through an amazing country. The mild desert Oaxacan valleys give way to a riot of coastal greenery and rushing rivers down near the Guatemalan border. You can see that giant volcano looming mightily way down south, too. That's Volcano Tacana, right on the Mexico-Guatemalan border." Then he says, "It was really interesting watching all that while driving down. He says it was a stark contrast for me, witnessing donkey carts pulling hay, while at the same time listening to a podcast of Doug Casey. You know, listening to a brilliant mind and at the same time watching donkeys is kind of weird. Signed, Bob from Oaxaca." Well, Bob, thanks for that. We always appreciate your emails. But you didn't tell us why you went to Guatemala, since you're living in Mexico, and from what you told us last email, you finally got your permanent residency in Mexico and don't have to pop in and out of the country every 90 or 180 days anymore. Bob, what's up with that?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.